Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning, GA Enterprise Incorporated versus the Town of St. Joseph, Wisconsin. Mr. Teague. May it please the Court, Randall Teague appearing for the appellant GM Enterprises in this matter. For 26 years, regulation of adult entertainment speech in the United States was governed by what I call an evidentiary house of cards. In 1976, the United States Supreme Court decided Young versus American Mini Theater, deciding for the first time that sexually explicit speech could be treated for zoning purposes differently than other speech based on the content of the speech. The theory behind that regulation was that what government was regulating was not the content of speech, but the adverse secondary effects associated with speech of a given content.
Mr. Teague, bear in mind that time is short. Suppose you're right that the plurality opinion in Alameda now represents the state of the law on the evidentiary process and this burden-shifting approach applies. The question I have for you is what specific evidence about this area is really in this record? Because the latest article is in fact just a critique of lots of other articles, and it does strike me that this is going to be an area-specific matter and a fact-specific matter. So what are you giving, or what were you offering the court for this sort of thing?
We offered the court, I think, three separate things. One is the LIMS criteria that basically says that the studies that municipalities have relied upon for the last 26 years are, from an evidentiary and scientific validity standpoint, essentially worthless.
But that's not positive evidence, and I guess my question there is, you are essentially arguing that something approaching the standards of Daubert must be followed by legislative bodies at the municipal level before they enact legislation, which strikes me as a sweeping proposition, whether it's for this kind of legislation or anything else.
Well, and I think, Your Honor, you have to distinguish between two separate situations. As Justice O'Connor did in her plurality opinion, as the 11th Circuit did in Peekaboo Lounge, there's a distinction between what you may rely upon in terms of the initial enactment. And in terms of the initial enactment, the legislature can rely on virtually anything. It can rely upon what is essentially a house of cards.
Well, the Supreme Court kindly referred to it common experience. You know, the people live there. They drive past these things.
And they can rely upon that, and if that is unchallenged, that's going to be legally sufficient. But if an adult entertainment plaintiff comes forward and challenges, and Justice O'Connor said the challenge can be one of two things. You can either challenge the reliability of the data the municipality relied upon, or you can produce your own independent data on the absence of secondary effects. If you do either one, at that point the burden shifts to the municipality to come forward with evidence to establish its view. And at this point, the only way that is in the least bit meaningful is if evidence refers to evidence that's admissible in a courtroom.
Because honestly, it seems to me that we could sweep away most of the legislation that Congress, every state legislature, and every municipality have enacted if we had that kind of rigorous standard. And it does strike me that if you're claiming that your methodological challenge in the form of this LIMS article on the studies that were before the Town of St. Joseph Board is enough to require that board to come back with a lot of evidence about deteriorating property values or other kinds of, you know, police calls and so on. There is evidence like that in the record, but it's just not a Daubert type of evidence.
Well, and I guess the question is it going to be admissible evidence? And again, look back at what Justice O'Connor said.
The question is, it can be admissible evidence as opposed to whether it is it meets the standards that the various justices of the Supreme Court have articulated for evidence on which a legislative body is entitled to rely when it passes this kind of ordinance.
Because if it didn't change that, then Justice O'Connor's statement that you can't rely upon shoddy reasoning or data is essentially meaningless.
But the problem is, there's no case that says it has to meet the Daubert criteria. I mean, that's what Judge Wood is getting at. There's no case that says you have to have that kind of evidence, is there?
I don't know that.
You're really pushing us to extend, really, that standard and make it a much tougher standard than has ever been articulated.
Well, I think when, and again, you're not talking about the initial enactment standard. You're talking about the standard once you've raised a challenge as to the validity and you're in court. I mean, the challenge that Justice O'Connor talked about is a challenge that is not going to arise until you're legally in court challenging the validity of an ordinance. And if you are permitted to rely upon the same type of shoddy reasoning or data that you rely upon for initial enactment, then Justice O'Connor's assertion that you can't rely upon shoddy reasoning or data is essentially meaningless.
Well, that's self-evident. What court would ever rely on shoddy reasoning? I mean, where do we go when you make a statement like that? That doesn't take you anywhere.
Well, what it takes, I would suggest, is in this case we presented, as I said, we presented three things. Number one, the data we relied upon wasn't any good. Number two, every single study of secondary effects, including the 1978 study in St. Paul, that is part of the initial data that the government relied upon, every single study that has followed sound methodological practice that is consistent with Daubert has found an absence of a correlation between adverse secondary effects and adult entertainment. And third, we supplied local data. We supplied evidence that the property values around this establishment are increasing at a higher rate than the county as a whole. They're not declining. We supplied analysis of the county's own data with respect to police calls and pointing out that during the hours that this establishment is an adult entertainment facility, it gets far fewer police calls than the much smaller period of time when it's a singles bar.
Which still gets a lot either way, and given the nature of our review of legislation, why is it impermissible for the town to say, even if there are not as many calls during the adult hours, if we want to call it that, versus the after 1 o'clock in the morning hours, or whatever the time is, I forget, the town can still say, can't it, that this is a place that's generating a lot of police calls, these kinds of places. And can it be skeptical about whether there's really a strict time demarcation?
Well, I think there is, because you have to direct your attention to are the police calls the result of the adult entertainment, and certainly if they were the result of the adult entertainment, they'd be more during the. It's an adult entertainment facility. 69% of its open hours. That 69% of its open hours generates 38% of the police calls. It's a singles bar 31% of the time. That 31% of the time generates 62% of the police calls.
So this is the local. Did this exclude the sheriff's department?
No, this is the sheriff's department report. So if you plot those out during the hours it's an adult entertainment facility, the police calls are overwhelmingly more during the hours that it's a singles bar, and that in fact correlates exactly with what Fulton County discovered when it compared bars that are exclusively adult entertainment and bars that weren't adult entertainment. And it found out that the adult entertainment bars generated about half the law enforcement calls that the non-adult entertainment.
Should that be the comparison? What if it never operates as a singles bar? So the statistics that you have are only those of those hours that it operates in the other fashion. What would you make of that? What if they shut down, you know, it shut down the singles operation? It was only the other operation. Does that, where do we go with the statistics? I guess what I'm really asking you, what floor do you want to have? What, are you suggesting we can never go to summary judgment in these cases, as long as you can have some statistical anomaly as between the hours of when these calls come in?
I guess my thoughts are you don't get to summary judgment until there is evidence. The way I put it is this. I would concede that it's like a baseball game where a tie goes to the runner. If you have competent evidence on both sides, so a municipality could reasonably draw either conclusion, you will defer to a municipality. But in order to get to the tie, under the Justice O'Connor plurality opinion, the municipality must come forward with evidence. Now,
can we complicate the matter just a little bit further and go back to remembering that it was a plurality opinion? And if you look at Justice Kennedy's opinion, you see a much greater openness to looking at this common experience. You know, some of these places might be in the middle of rural areas where, you know, the cows don't care, you know, what kind of an establishment's around it, and some of them might be in the middle of the city of Chicago, and some of them may be in a place somewhere in between, like St. Joseph. Why don't you need the kind of specific evidence or common experience that something like the 11th Circuit case in Flanagan had? Your evidence is not nearly that detailed.
Well, I think the evidence presented in the 11th Circuit might have been a little better than what we had here, but I certainly think that what we presented here is more than enough to trigger the burden-shifting process. If you want to count votes, I would suggest that the...
We have to count votes. It was a plurality opinion.
I understand that.
Right.
But you have a four-justice plurality opinion by Justice O'Connor that says the burden shifting occurs when the plaintiffs make a challenge and present evidence that trigger the challenge. If you look at the opinion of Justice Souter, he would require that evidence in the first instance. And so I would suggest that Justice O'Connor's opinion really carries as far as the burden shifting is concerned. You've got eight justices that would support at least that, because the Souter dissent would require the O'Connor level of evidence in the first instance, rather than awaiting a plaintiff to make a challenge. And I see I'm now into my rebuttal time, so I'll reserve the remaining time for the rebuttal. All right, thank you, Mr. Burnham.
May it please the court, counsel. It seems to me there are two issues to be decided by the court in the course of deciding the ultimate issue of whether the trial court properly granted summary judgment. The first issue is, what is the actual standard that the town of St. Joseph has to meet here? And number two, what can it use to meet that standard? The appellant's position is that the town of St. Joseph is required to prove in a court of law that sexually oriented businesses cause secondary effects, and it can prove that only using evidence admissible under the federal rules of evidence and that meets the Daubert standard.
Now, just to look at it for a minute from Mr. Tighe's side, we're talking here about legislation that impinges on the First Amendment. We know that at least from the bottom line of these various Supreme Court decisions, though the court has constant problems coming up with majority opinions in this area. But there is a First Amendment overlay, and why isn't it actually required, if you're impinging on First Amendment rights, to impose a much higher standard on local legislation than we would if you're, you know, zoning for where you want the manufacturing district in your town to be located, or any of a number of things that we give huge deference to municipal decisions on?
Well, whether it's appropriate or not, I'm not sure.
Required. If you're going to impinge on somebody's First Amendment rights, isn't that the message of all of these cases?
Well, what Alameda Brooks said was, given the test that you have, the four-part test that this court set out in the Benz Bar versus Town of Somerset case in January, after reviewing all the decisions of the U.S. Supreme Court, came down with the test of demonstrating of asking the question whether the ordinance is designed to serve a substantial governmental interest. And what this court said was, and Alameda Books said, was to satisfy that criteria, the court must ask, can the town demonstrate a link, a connection, between the speech that's being regulated and the secondary effect? And I think there is a big difference between asking, can the town demonstrate a connection, a link, versus can the town prove in a court of law? That's not required.
Well, it does take us, though, to your second question, doesn't it? Because you do have to demonstrate that link, and then we just need to decide, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good does your evidence have to be? If Daubert's a 10, and if Huang is a 0, you know, where are you on that scale, and have you met whatever that standard is?
Well, Alameda Books said, the same as Renton, that a legislative body can rely
on plurality. Which opinion in Alameda Books you
can I think it's not unfair to say that Judge Kennedy, in his concurring opinion, did make the statement in passing that the plurality addressed the evidence required to support the ordinance, and he made the statement that he agreed with that. Now, he didn't cite to what portion of the plurality he was agreeing with, but one could make that jump. But
maybe you can and maybe you can't. He did not actually sign Justice O'Connor's opinion, which is the problem we have, and it was an opinion concurring in the judgment. It wasn't a concurring opinion.
I agree. Obviously, it's to my benefit if we have just a plurality. I'm merely commenting that just this court has already ruled in Benz Bar that Judge Kennedy's opinion is the controlling opinion in that case, and Judge Kennedy did make that statement that he agreed with whatever this presentation of evidence scenario was that the plurality opinion described. But
are you actually agreeing now with Mr. Teig, then, that Justice O'Connor's view of the presentation of the evidence is, in fact, the controlling standard because Justice Kennedy made that statement?
No, I don't think that what Justice O'Connor said was any different than what was said in prior cases, as we put in the quote in our brief. I think it was from the Erie case, where the court has already essentially made the same statement in another plurality opinion. What does not change is the standard that the town has to meet or the type of evidence that can use just because something like the Lynn study is submitted. The standard that the town is required to meet at the outset of its legislation is that it has to have a reasonable belief that there is a connection between the speech being regulated and the secondary effects.
Right. Now, could I interject, though? In your brief, you seem to make the argument that you can base a reasonable belief on the fact that other people have said the same thing, particularly judges, and I'm not really sure what sort of experts judges are on this matter. And here's my problem with this. People over the course of human history have often repeated things for a long time, and then those things have turned out to be wrong. I mean, for a long time people thought the world was flat, and this was well established, and then that actually turned out to be wrong. Or, you know, we thought that the Earth was the center of the universe under the Ptolemaic system, and then 14 centuries later Copernicus comes along. So, I mean, mere repetition doesn't strike me as very good evidence.
No, but what the court has said over and over is that a legislative body can rely upon any evidence reasonably believed to be relevant, and they have specifically said they can rely upon experiences of other locales, they can rely upon judicial determinations and the recitations of evidence, and they can rely upon studies, not just in their locale, they can rely upon studies elsewhere. And you raised the question earlier in questioning Mr. Teig about you don't seem to have local specific information. Well, the town of St. Joseph never asserted it was passing this ordinance because it was having property value problems in its own locale. What it presented was
if you look in the record, there's a St. Croix County planning document. And what that document warned the city about, as it did the city of Somerset, which resulted in its passage of its ordinance, what it warned them was, we're sitting here across the river from Minnesota. We've got these establishments starting to be built on the main highway. We're going to have problems of a proliferation of these businesses, and we need to do something about it, whether we currently have difficulty or not. So that's what this was addressed to, and it was not enacted based upon the town of St. Joseph saying, we currently have a terrible problem we need to respond to. And what they looked to was precisely the evidence that courts have over and over said that a legislative body can look to. And again, I think it's important to emphasize the standard they're trying to meet. They're not required to prove that these studies are correct. They're not required to prove that the courts are correct. What they're required to show, because it is the First Amendment, and because there's been some contrary evidence presented, what they're required to show is, looking at the record that we have, including the Lens documents, looking at that record and the judicial decisions and the studies of all these other areas, is there a reasonable basis for this legislature to believe that there is a link, a connection between the operations of these businesses and the potential difficulties? And that's all they have to meet. And they certainly don't have to rely solely upon Daubert evidence. That's never been a criteria in any decision. And in fact, it was reiterated in Alameda. They can rely upon any evidence they please that's reasonably believed to be relevant. Now,
does it have to have any objective justification? I mean, what if it's like Dr. Strangelove, you know, fluoride is bad for you or something?
There is no question that a legislature could proffer an absurd justification for an ordinance, which if somebody came to court and presented contrary information, it wouldn't fly. The notion that there is, it's not reasonable to believe that it's sexually oriented businesses as a type of business have an impact, a negative impact, is not one I would suggest that's even subject to debate at this point. What we have decisions of numerous circuits that say, that refer to the secondary effects of sexually oriented businesses as being well known, as being well established, as being commonly accepted. Now, when the town of St. Joseph's is sitting there wondering, can we enact this legislation? Is there reason out there to believe that there is this connection between these businesses? I think that the courts have said they're entitled to rely upon those earlier determinations.
Right, and I guess my only concern is, somewhere at the bottom of these earlier determinations, I would feel more comfortable if there were some actual concrete evidence, because I go back to my earlier point, things have been said over and over and they become common wisdom, and sometimes it turns out there's actually no reality. I mean, there was a time in the Jim Crow period in the South, people would have said, well, it's of course well established that you need to keep the races separate, and you could probably have found lots of people and even lots of courts who had said it, and we would say today that's an unacceptable view to take, and many other examples. Where is the underlying empirical evidence that all these courts are relying on?
In the 16 studies that the town of St. Joseph cited, the same studies that numerous courts have reviewed, they have looked at them, they have said these are sufficient to demonstrate the link that allows this legislature to pass this legislation. When I use the word evidence, I think as I asked at the beginning, one of the fundamental questions is, what can St. Joseph use to demonstrate the connection? If you're going to say we can only use evidence admissible in a court, we lose. That's not what any legislature uses.
Mr. Byrne, does there have to be any local tie? For example, if a new development 100 miles from the now existing sexually explicit business exists, could a new town, let's call it new town, pass such an ordinance based on the 16 study? In other words, it has no history of the town other than the development. I mean, could you exclude it without any tie to... Because there would be no police calls, there would be no experience.
Well, in the case that started this whole long line of debates about sexually oriented businesses. Renton passed an ordinance that didn't even have a sexually oriented business. I mean, that's what a legislative body is charged to do by its citizens, is to provide for the future of the community. And while the 11th Circuit seems to go a little different direction than a number of other circuits have, I think it's certainly appropriate for the town of St. Joseph Council to look down the road and see what the experiences have been elsewhere. I mean, there's nothing unique about the people in the town of St. Joseph versus the people in the city of Erie. That people have the same reaction to these kind of businesses. And I think what the Supreme Court was trying to say, although they've never said it, what they were trying to suggest when they said that these towns can rely upon judicial decisions elsewhere finding secondary effects, and they can rely upon studies elsewhere, is to avoid these towns every time they want to pass an ordinance addressing a business that is generally accepted in the nation as causing difficulties, that they have to go out and hire somebody, and that they have to conduct a very extensive study just to support the ordinance. I think the Supreme Court was saying, well, you don't have to do that. And I think when you get back to the record in this case that was before Judge Shabbat, all of the prior decisions of courts, all of the studies, and the experiences of other communities, there wasn't any question that the town of St. Joseph had a reasonable basis to believe that there was a connection between these businesses and negative secondary effects, and that's all it was required to show. Now, Mr. Lins fought some of these studies and says they don't meet Daubert, and therefore they can't be relied upon to prove that sexually oriented businesses cause these effects, and that may well be true, but that's not the standard we're trying to meet here. I have nothing more. Thank you.
All right, thanks, sir. Okay.
I think it's important in determining whether summary judgment should be granted, not only what the city did, but what the town failed to do. Mr. Lynn said none of the studies they rely upon have the least bit of scientific validity to them, and pointed out some serious methodological flaws, couldn't support it. City responded, did not respond by saying these studies are reliable, produce any evidence that says they're
reliable. Are there any reliable studies in your research in this area?
Mr. Lynn's affidavit in this regard, which is uncontradicted, says every single study that has applied methodologically sound criteria, including the ones done by the government, particularly St. Paul in 1978 and Fulton County that was part of the Flanagan's Enterprises record, have concluded there are no adverse secondary effects.
No, there is no. The answer is, in your view, there is no such
thing. There are not.
And when courts talk about relying on these prior studies, that's a false bottom, right?
No question about it.
That whole line of jurisprudence, in your view, including the Supreme Court, I guess, is without base.
On balance, regarding on an evidentiary basis, yes, which now automated books permits us to challenge. And I guess I see...
No, the red light is on. That's just a warning light.
Oh, okay. That's an orange light.
Right. Right.
And let me follow up and give you a perfect example of the issue of race. The so-called empirical basis for Young versus American Mini Theaters was an affidavit by a sociologist by the name of Mel Ravitz that says when adult entertainment folks businesses move in the neighborhood, the perception of the neighbors is that this is going to increase crime and decline in property values, and that's exactly what happens because of that perception. 15 years before, Mel Ravitz had written an article that is absolutely word for word identical, except instead of adult entertainment moving into the neighborhood, it's black people moving into the neighborhood. And that is, in fact, the empirical basis by which the entire adult entertainment line of cases began.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.